It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That ball's drilled high and deep to left field. Yiner Diaz gives the Astros a 3-2 lead in the ninth.
Ooh, I like it when that bartender's up late. Little Yiner bomb to finish things off.
Called third strike. He comes back and gets the save tonight. Brian Abreu coming off a big workload on Tuesday night. Saves the game on a Wednesday, and the Astros get a much-needed win with Yiner Diaz hitting the home run in the ninth. And Abreu picking up a big save.
Yeah, I would say the three stars of the game. They do this in the NHL. At least they used to when I was a Hartford Whalers season ticket holder back in the day. NHL fans, do they still do this? They have the three stars of the game, and they announce them after, and they each take a little circle around, like, the number three star of the game, and he comes out and tips his helmet. The three stars of the game last night, I would say, Seth, were the number three star, Brian Abreu with the save, the number two star, Yiner Diaz with the game-winning home run, and I would say the number one star, Jason Alexander, with another outstanding start for the Houston Astros, whose pitching staff is dwindling by the week.
Yes. I mean, everybody protect Jason Alexander's elbow. You see him out in public.
Yes.
You see him at the grocery store and he's reaching for a gallon of milk.
You
say, hey,
it.
Maybe Jason, maybe try a half gallon, you know? Let's just take it easier.
Or grab the gallon for him, put it in the cart, and follow him throughout the store to grab any other heavy things that he's getting.
Why are any of our major league pitchers doing their own manual tasks?
Yes.
Not even labor, tasks
wake
around the
up.
Home.
Wake up,
Where
Houston.
Are we as a city?
Wake up, Houston. My God, that won't be creepy at all. Just if you see Jason Alexander anywhere out and about shopping, Home Depot, Target, the grocery store, the kolache factory, if he's buying a dozen kolaches for the locker room or whatever, you carry those kolaches out to his car, all right?
If you actually recognize Jason Alexander when you see
him. I know.
It's one of my least favorite things about baseball is like the random times where there's some guy, I'll see somebody in the grocery store and I'm like, I think that's the guy they signed like 3 weeks ago.
Well, especially this guy, especially Jason Alexander. Like, he looks as average dude as an average dude could look.
Right. You know? And baseball players usually in street clothes look a lot more like average guys too. So it's, there's always a, and then you realize you've been staring at him for 30 seconds and that they're aware that you're staring at him. And then it feels even weirder.
Yep.
So just if you definitely recognize that it's Jason Alexander, just go up and help him out.
Yeah.
And if it's not Jason Alexander, he'll just think that you're a good Samaritan.
Right. Either way, you're helping somebody out. So there's nothing to lose here. I guess the big decision, the two big decisions Joe Espada had last night, do I leave Jason Alexander out there for another inning after six innings? He did, and it worked. That worked out fine. Alexander only threw 89 pitches. You know, I don't know if there was any thought of him going back out for the eighth inning after that. Who knows? And then on the heels of not just Tuesday night, Seth, but the last week and a half or so with Brian Abreu is, do I try, like, last night would have been the perfect night to try something different in the ninth inning. Abreu threw 30 pitches and was horrible the night before.
I think that with Abreu, this is where I am with him. It's that obviously I don't think it's just dumb random luck or chance. There's a psychological obstacle to being the closer as opposed to the setup guy. And you got to just, though, still recognize him as your best possible option and just go full force into it. Spada had a heart-to-heart with him. They were sitting by themselves at the end of the bench before the game or during batting practice, whenever it was. And, you know, Spada told Abreu that he trusts him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's your best option at this point in the absence of Hader, is you just got to roll with him and he'll learn, take his lumps and learn some hard lessons along the way. But by the time you get the playoffs, he's psychologically hardened for it.
Yeah, I went back and forth with a lot of people on Twitter last night because I was espousing not using him last night. And most people took exception to it after he had already gotten the save. That was very brave of everybody to come at me after he got the save.
What a hero.
Very courageous of all of you on Twitter to come after me after he got the save. Those of you that wanted to engage in actual productive conversation about why it made sense to use Abreu. I thought made a lot of sense, which was his slider's been getting destroyed. He just got up there and just started throwing heat last night. Like, he was just throwing it by people last night. Here was Espada on using Abreu after using him for 30 pitches the night before.
If he wasn't able to go today, I would not have used him. But he felt good. I was only going to use him on a save opportunity, which it was. When Yanier Diaz hit that home run, I felt really good.
Okay. And look, the question's been answered. Like, for anybody who had any question after Abreu's bad outing on Tuesday, the latest in a series of bad outings that he's had, if there's going to be any change, there ain't going to be any change. Like, this hater thing has forced you into break glass in case of emergency with Abreu, and you're just hanging on to that axe or fire extinguisher or whatever it is. Like, he's going to be pitching the ninth inning, and that's it. Like, that's
he's
it.
He's going to pitch in the ninth inning, and look, they're going to continue to send people out to the plate when there's runners in scoring position. Sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing. There's nothing. You can't just, like, punt on that inning and hope that you just... I guess, what would the strategy be? Just, like, you just got to go with it with Abreu. And, hey, hopefully there's more good than bad. He's probably going to... If you go from now until the end of the playoffs, I'm guessing that he might have another bad performance or two as a closer. But when he's on, he's unhittable, and you're just going to go with it and roll with it. The strategy on offense, I think, would be like, hey, guys, listen, we already see fewer pitches than just about anybody in the league. We're hitting for contact, all right. Just start swinging for the fences. Just, I don't care if you strike out. Just start swinging for the fences.
Something.
God forbid we get runners on base, because then we're completely useless. I want nothing but guys out there with zero pressure and with a full green light to swing for the fences no matter what.
That's why Yiner hit the home run, man. That's why he hit the home run. There was nobody on base. Yeah, it was
except when he almost hit the home run, but it wasn't because there was somebody on
base.
That's
right.
That just turns into an RBI double. If there was nobody on base, he would have, it 100% would have gone 6 inches to the left and missed that little nook there in right field.
These runners are a big distraction, man. I guess the thing where I, you point this out, Seth, I'm very up and down. I'm hot and cold on Abreu. And look, I know he's got a ton of talent. Like, I know he's been very good for this team, no question about it. I guess the saving grace would be, if we're going to be of that school of thought, like, hey, the ninth inning is really different from the eighth inning, and you can really see that with Brian Abreu. The first seven times he came out as the closer after Hader went to the IL, he was good. Yeah, it wasn't like he got handed the ninth inning because Hader got hurt, and then he had those four bad outings in a row. Like, something was clicking for him for a while, for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then he just hit. That's what I mean. That's the optimist in me is going to say, okay, well, he just hit a rough patch, you know, or he was just, you know, he had bad control of one pitch. Stay away from that pitch and use these pitches instead. And I think the other thing is, well, he's not Josh Hader. You know, he's not going to be as automatic as Hader is. You know, that's just the fact of the matter right now with Abreu. So I am hopeful that what we saw last night was just a recalibration, kind of got a little more organized with what pitches he was going to use. And the fact that he did it against the exact same team that bludgeoned him the night before makes me feel good about where he's at mentally. Like, it's the exact same guy, maybe not the exact same hitters, but the exact same laundry up there, same stadium, same everything else, where he had just gotten beat to a pulp 24 hours ago that he came in and did what he did last night. I'm going to be optimistic about Brian Abreu.
Hey, Ben, put this in the big book of betterment of baseball ideas.
Ben, the other, no, that, yeah, that yeah, book, right, that one right
it's
there.
It's the leather-bound one.
Yep.
I think teams should be allowed to forfeit an inning when they're on offense. I think if you get to a point, think about how much faster it would help the games go along. Honestly, you should get to a situation you feel like, you know what, I think they might rest. I think they might sit the pitcher down after this inning anyway, and we like our chances better if we got the next guy in the lineup on as a leadoff of the next inning. Yes, just forfeit the inning.
Hey, Ben. I don't know if this is on the back channel or if Seth can hear me right now, but on the big book of baseball betterment ideas, did they see at the bottom where it says by Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast? Can you, just take your pen? Can you just run it right through Sean Pendergast? Can you just cross it out?
That's like when people refuse to, on a bad movie, they'll take their names off the credits. There's some.
Now I'm good.
There's an actual names that they use for that. When people are like, no, I don't want to be in the credits.
Redact me. Redact me. Big book of baseball.
That'd be fun. That's a whole extra level of strategy, and it speeds the game up, Sean.
It does speed the game up. Manfred likes that part. Oh, you're telling me we skip an entire, the rest of a half inning? Yeah, it's going to shave 9 minutes and 14 seconds off the time of the game. Manfred's like, approved.
With this Astros team, whichever of the many Astros players that are bad at hitting with runners in scoring position, I feel like there's got to be a couple that are so drastic that you're like, God. No, that's all right, man. We're gonna punt on this one.
Revolutionary.
We want this guy up. We want this guy up with a clean slate in the next inning.
Revolutionary.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, shifting gears a little bit. By the way, the Astros play today. It's a day game today at 2:00. They'll try to win this series against the Toronto Blue Jays. You and I talked yesterday, Seth, about this. I mean, it's turned into a blood war now between Cleveland and Baltimore on Sunday with this Baltimore celebration of Art Modell, the 30th anniversary of him bringing the team from Cleveland to Baltimore. But they are so angry about this in Cleveland. It's incredible.
Okay, they're really angry about it in Cleveland. I have a hard time getting angry at Baltimore. It's not their fault that the NFL put Cleveland on the schedule for their first home game. So if you're going to sell it 30, it's not like they're celebrating the 31st year or something. Okay, 30 years, that's a nice solid decade.
Yes.
Right there. You're right between decades or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that what the Ravens really need to do is to do a special tribute to Art Modell. It can't just be we're celebrating our 30th year here. It's got to be, this is the year that Art Modell brought football back to Baltimore.
That's what it's going to be. I'm predicting it's going to. Well, I've been reading a lot about this stuff and about this particular game. And what's kind of embedded, I think, in this is there is, and it's more in Baltimore, obviously, than in Cleveland, but there has been a concerted effort. I got to ask McClain about this. I've been reading about a big concerted effort to try to get Art Modell into the Hall of Fame. He is an owner that's not in the Hall of Fame. That if you don't live in Cleveland, you can come up with Cleveland people just hate him because he stole the team from this. I mean, stole his own team that he owned. He moved the team out of Cleveland.
Yeah.
But he was very influential throughout the history of the NFL. And so there's a big push to get him into the Hall of Fame, which is why I think this is going to be somewhat Modell-centric. I mean, his family is still around. They won a Super Bowl.
The Ravens won a Super Bowl when Modell was still the
very
owner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so it's like that's the extra salt in the wound too. Everything he couldn't do in Cleveland, he did in Baltimore.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. So I am very anxious to see how this is executed. They are so mad in Cleveland, right? Like, however mad you were, Texan fans, about the Oiler jerseys on the Titans a couple of years ago. And multiply it times 10. They are so angry about this up in Cleveland from what I've listened to and read. You know who's angry? This is how you know that they're angry in Cleveland, Seth. You know who's angry with me and you about our discussion on this yesterday? You and I kind of gave Baltimore a pass, just like we did right now.
Yeah.
Take one guess as to a coworker of ours.
Figgy?
Figgy is angry with me and you about our...
He's not. Figgy doesn't get angry at me. Maybe you.
I didn't get angry at anybody. And he's all of a sudden, he's angry... Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, no. Did you call him Buddy again?
I didn't call him Buddy. Good call, Ben. No, I didn't say, hey, Buddy, this is the topic. You know, we're just talking about.
Figgy's mad at me?
He's mad at us.
No.
He stopped me in the hallway yesterday after we got done talking about it.
And he gave you a serious talking
to?
I know exactly what his face probably looked like, too.
Yeah.
Because he felt bad that he was angry. He was angry. Okay.
His smile was only like halfway smiling, not all the way.
Yeah, he kind of like gave it like a half smile and probably looked down and was like, "Man,
that's pretty accurate,
like,
actually."
No, I know exactly. I think maybe he's been mad at me before.
I'll find out.
I feel like I dialed up that image of him being angry a little too quickly.
Okay, here's my question for Figgy. Is he mad at Joe Flacco? Joe Flacco, former Raven, won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. Now the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Here was Joe Flacco asked yesterday.
Oh, no.
About this whole Baltimore celebration going on Sunday.
I think you can take it however you want. If you're from Cleveland, you can take it one way. And if you're from Baltimore, you can, you know, say it's not a big deal. It's just one of those things. Honestly, for me, it kind of makes it more exciting. You know, we get to go in there when they're throwing, when they're having some people back and, you know, just more ex-players, more eyes on you. It'll make it more interesting.
Okay, that I get big respect for Joe Flacco because, first of all, like, that's probably an answer Cleveland didn't want to hear, that, hey, it makes it more interesting. Like, Cleveland wants to hear that Flacco is as hopping mad as they are.
Yeah.
But Flacco is 100% right. Like, this does give it some juice. I liked when the Titans decided to wear the Oiler uniforms because it took an otherwise kind of meaningless game for the Titans at the time and not meaningless for the Texans. They were still in the playoff hunt. But it added juice to a game that was, by and large, around the country, for sure, a juiceless game.
You know what Figgy and the rest of the Cleveland Browners are right now when it comes to Joe Flacco? It's as if Flacco has a new girlfriend, and the girlfriend wants to talk smack about one of his ex-girlfriends. And Flacco's like, well, I don't know. We don't need to go there. Oh, we don't have to, huh? Oh, she's so great. Oh, you just can't. Oh, you got to defend your ex-girlfriend, do ya? And Figgy's standing there with his hands on his hips, you know, with the palms facing forward, but like back on the back.
Like the wrist. Oh, like his wrist.
Oh, I didn't realize she was so special that you couldn't criticize your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. Figgy's got the back, like the back of his wrist touching his kidneys right there. He's swinging his elbows.
Yeah. What's that called when you hold your hands like that?
I don't know. Let's call it the Figgy. It's the Figgy from now.
He's gonna be so mad at you now.
Oh, I know.
He's
not madder than he is already.
Mad at you.
He probably
he knows
is.
You direct the show. He knows that you guided
me
into saying anything that was bad about the Browns.
I'll find out. He's always
fandom.
I'm gonna go talk to him. He's up here early usually. I'll find out who exactly he's mad at. You're probably right. It's probably me. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Thursday. Hey, speaking of old faces in new places. Cowboys kicking tires on a guy. Did we see this being the circle of life for this player when the Texans drafted him a decade ago? Cowboys kicking tires on a former Texan. We've got that for you coming up next.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.